Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel, which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
If your faith has no room for suffering or waiting, you might have a God you can control, but not a God you can trust. I want you to write this down. First 40, second 40, final 40. Put this in your phone. If you're on a piece of paper, create some space between those three statements. The first 40, the second 40, and the third 40. First 40, second 40, and the final 40. I think one of the most misunderstood and not understood aspects in Christianity is what does it mean to follow God? And let's just be honest, on a real surface level, it's quite simple. It means to go wherever he's going, to do whatever he's doing, and to know where he is, because when you know where he is, then you know how to go. But there's so much complexity to it as well. There's so much complexity because as I look back on my own life and let's say 10, 15 years ago, I was following God with everything. And then today I go, man, it looks so much different today than it did 10, 15 years ago. So it naturally begs the question, was I following him then and now I'm following him now or not? I don't really have an answer to that, but what I do know, and I love it, summed up in an old Catholic mystic named Thomas Merton. He says something to this effect. God, I think you take delight in the fact that I'm following you with the best of my ability, even if I don't know what I'm doing in the process. I want to challenge you, one of the misunderstood, maybe not understood, aspect of our following God is actually, what does it look like to follow him? Today, I want to continue the conversation that we talked about last week of the paradox of waiting and suffering. If you weren't here last week, I encourage you to listen to it on the podcast. It is definitely my most vulnerable, raw talk I could potentially ever give. I don't think there's anything more raw-er or more vulnerable than that. You see, culture has taught us to master the external appearance of what it means to follow God. It can be from wearing t-shirts of what you believe in. It could be the music you listen to. It could be the inspirational quotes that you post on Instagram. It could be all the things we do on the outside, but the kingdom is more concerned about what's happening on the inside than it is on the outside. Now, that doesn't mean what's on the outside is not important, because in all reality, that should be an overflow of what's actually happening on the inside. The challenge is we sometimes think if I make it look like I'm following God, then I must be following God. And the reality is, no, you will know if what's happening on the outside is resonating with what's happening on the inside. If they're the dissonance, and that's okay, because that's the invitation that Jesus says, come closer. I'm going to fix the dissonance between what's happening here and what's happening outside of here. In all reality, that should be an overflow of what's going on in here. Kindness should not be something you're instructed to do if it's truly something that's a culture inside of you. Generosity should not just only stay in the confines of obedience. It actually should move into a space of like, this is an overflow of me following God. This is a natural response, not out of performance, but out of relationship. And this is the journey of what it means to follow God, is to continually be in a process of reformation, transformation, awakening of what's happening inside of you and the natural overflow outside of you. Now, let's be honest. How many are thankful that there are laws in place? Because sometimes the law kind of tells you, this is how you should be. And if we fast backwards, go backwards a long time to the Ten Commandments, it's never been about grace versus the law, which we can sum up in the Ten Commandments. It's been grace versus sin and death. Law is just a lower standard. And this is where we have to remember, when it says, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet, do not take another man's wife, do not steal people's goats, do not lie, all those things, we have somehow projected that to be the higher standard of what it means to follow God. I want to propose to you, that is the lowest standard of what it means to follow God. That's not the epiphany, the epitome, the pinnacle of what it means to follow God. That is actually the lowest standard. And before the cross and before the death and resurrection of Jesus, God instituted what he calls the Ten Commandments. And we have taken that on from a historical standpoint. And those Ten Commandments were to show you how to be a decent human being in this world. In the midst of your brokenness, dysfunction, in the midst of all the things you're navigating, the internal turmoil, God says, hey, at the end of the day, stop murdering people. Why did he say that? Because that wasn't the norm. Stop stealing. Okay. All these things were an external instruction to teach you of what it means to actually follow him. But it wasn't until the cross, it wasn't until the death and resurrection of Jesus where grace was made available. And this is what I want you to get as we get into today's talk, is that he is after the transformation of your inner world more than your external world. One thing my parents taught me, being raised by them, but even as I became a parent, is that my dad was more concerned about our attitude and our heart than our behavior. In fact, he would very rarely address our behavior. My mom and my dad would very, very rarely address our behavior. He would always address our heart, because he knew if our heart could get healthy and whole, then our behavior would automatically change. And I think some of our systems that we set up and some of our homes, some of our relationships are designed to behavior modification, not heart transformation. In fact, I would venture to say, sometimes when you hear people like me share and do talks like this, you might be hearing it out, I need to adjust my behavior. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you need to let God to transform your heart. And that will automatically affect the output, what we call behavior and expressions. So if you find dissonance between your behavior and your heart, in other words, you're doing it out of obedience, then guess what? You're missing an opportunity to grow. You're missing a window to grow in here. Because when you let God transform you here, no one has to tell you, do not murder. Do not steal. No one has to tell you, be kind. No one has to tell you, be generous. Why? Because when that transformation takes place deep inside of you, guess what? A natural output of that is kindness, generosity, thoughtfulness, the ability to fight for people, the ability to do things that you could not do prior. And today, I want to take you deeper into this reality. Last week, we talked about the paradox of waiting and suffering. It's the what to do now until then. It's the hallway. Hallways are wonderful if you know there's a room somewhere, but if you can't see the room, hallways are terrifying. You're like, where's the light switch? Turn the light switch on. I need to see what my options are. How many have ever, if not right now or ever, been in a hallway where it's dark and you can't see where you're supposed to go? You see, that's the normal life human experience, is hallways. It's the time, and we wish we could determine 3 months is okay, but anything more than that, I just can't do it. So we stay in the room that we thought we were supposed to leave. In fact, some of us will not leave the room we're leaving or in because we don't know what the next room looks like, so we just stay in the same room. One of the struggles that we have as humans, especially when you believe that God is the God of breakthrough, he's God of miracles. He's the God that kicks down walls and chases after you. One of the dilemma dynamics we have when we believe that is there's this other side, and I don't want to call it the shadow side, I'll just call it the other side of the coin, is when that's not happening, what do you do? And that's the dilemma we all have in. We have this paradox and there's a really beautiful metaphor that actually was originated in someone's reality, but now it's become our everyday metaphor within the church and even outside the church. It's this metaphor of the wilderness. How many have ever used that term to try to describe the season you're in? I'm in my wilderness season. And we laugh at it, but it's true. It's like, man, the wilderness, jeez, the wilderness. But that actually originated by someone's life and story. And now we just use it as a metaphor. And if you take the wilderness metaphor, you can actually look at three different phases of this man's life that we're referring to, named Moses. There's Egypt, which is slavery and bondage and control. And then there's wilderness, which was the space before the promised land. The promised land is such a highly used metaphor. It's used across humanity, outside the church and in the church. I'm going to my promised land. It's just the easiest thing to try to describe. I'm going somewhere. And here we have a man who actually walked through the first 40 years of his life, the second 40 years of his life, and the final 40 years of his life. And today I want to walk you through some things to show you I believe would be helpful in the paradox of waiting and suffering as we live in these hallways. In Israel's story, it was the space between two civilizations. It was the space between two realities. But nonetheless, they were in the wilderness. We often move to new cities, change job, change relationships, and guess what? We're still there. Have you ever noticed you can't get away from yourself? How many have tried to get away from yourself? Thank you, Alvin. Alvin, the honest one. How many have changed the job thinking I could get away from myself? I can step into a new space. But if you don't actually meet you, guess what? You go everywhere you go, no matter how many changes you make. Some of us have experienced the adverse side of this decision. We've changed job, changed relationship, changed cities, changed churches. We've just made all these changes. And the first few months are wonderful, like, oh, new season, finally. I've been waiting for this. And then when the hype wears off, guess who you meet? You. And guess what? You're the same person. And like, why are the same things happening now that were in my last season? I thought I changed all of it. No, you changed the scenery. But you are still you. Have you ever noticed how many conversations you have with yourself? I don't know about you, but I am talking to myself all the time. It's a three-way conversation. It's me, myself, and I. Sometimes God's involved, but I don't know. Sometimes it's just a lot of Eric talking to self. It's amazing how many conversations that we have. And until we can introduce ourselves to ourselves or be introduced to ourselves, guess what? We will just continue to repeat Egypt over and over and over. If you have your Bible, turn to Acts chapter 7, starting verse 20. I want to read a portion of scripture that will do justice on the story that I'm trying to unpack in a fairly efficient manner, especially with time. Acts chapter 7, verse 20. I'm going to read all the way to verse 34. At that time, Moses was born, and he was no ordinary child. For 3 months, he was cared for by his family. When he was placed outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him in and brought him up as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. When Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his own people, the Israelites. He saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian, so he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought his own people would realize that God was using him to restore them or rescue them, but they did not. The next day, Moses came upon two Israelites who were fighting. He tried to reconcile them by saying, "Men, you are brothers. Why do you want to hurt each other?" But the man who was mistreating the other pushed Moses aside and said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" When Moses heard this, he fled to Midian, where he settled as a foreigner and had two sons. After 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to Moses in the flames of a burning bush in the desert near Mount Sinai. When he saw this, he was amazed at the sight. As he went over to get a closer look, he heard the Lord say, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Moses trembled with fear and did not dare to look. Then the Lord said to him, "Take off your sandal, for the place where you're standing is holy ground. I have indeed seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their groaning and have come down to set them free. Now come, I will send you back to Egypt." In your note, I told you to write down the first 40. I'm going to share some thoughts and write down whatever makes sense to you. The first 40 years of Moses' life started out with a tragedy, but turned into an incredible experience that actually we find out later was invaluable. It was necessary. It was needed for the calling and the assignment on the life of Moses. The first 40 years were the time of privilege. It was a time of access. It was a time of great wealth. And it was also a time where Moses had an identity crisis, an identity conflict, because he's a Hebrew-born child, but he was raised in the house of Pharaoh, an Egyptian. So he had an internal culture, an internal value system. He had an internal DNA that came from his Hebrew line, but he was raised in an Egyptian framework. So at some point, and we find out in the passage we just read, he couldn't handle it anymore because his external reality didn't match the internal reality, and he felt injustice was happening, and so he decided to take justice into his own hand, and he killed somebody that was being mistreated by an Egyptian. And as we read just a moment ago, the next day Moses tried to solve conflict between two fellow Israelites. And as he's doing that, they said, "Are you going to kill us too?" And that ended the first 40 years of Moses' life. But the first 40 years, he also learned statecraft. He learned politics. He learned the ways of empire. He learned how an empire thinks. He learned how an empire advances. He learned how an empire exerts control for economic gain. He learned all of this in the first 40 years of his life. Which, as we know, we read the whole story now, and what we see is that Moses was used by God to set people free from the empire. How? Because he understood how they thought, how they lived, how they acted. He was able to dismantle. So I wonder how many seasons of our life we're in an environment we do not want to be in, but God actually has you there because someday you're going to help set people free from that environment. There was a lot there. I'm going to leave that there for right now. Just let Melissa take that from here. Moses also learned in the first 40 years that positional leadership is different than leadership that people say, "You are my leader." You see, he thought when he tried to solve the problem with two Israelites, two fellow Hebrew brothers, that because who he was, they would respect it, and they did not respect him. You see, there's something in leadership. Sometimes we think, if I have the position or the title, people will listen to me. They will if their job depends on it, but if their job does not depend on it, it's pointless. This is why one of the questions in all my leadership teaching and speaking teaching, I will always ask the question, who am I to you? And I tell anybody that's a leader, anybody that had any desire to influence, whatever it may be in a leadership capacity or speaking capacity, you have to determine who do the people say you are to them. Because if you think you're a leader and they don't view you as a leader, their level of dissonance is awkward and embarrassing. So this is one of the most vital things that Moses learned in this season. He recognized, oh, I'm not actually a leader. I might have a position, a title, but I'm actually not a leader to them. So in the first 40 years, Moses learned a lot. He learned he got an education, he got privilege, he got leadership skills, and a sense of justice. But without humility and God's timing, this was all going to be a liability. So guess what happens? He goes to the second 40 years of his life, which is what we call the wilderness. Now, the second 40 is very different than the first 40. The first 40 was wealth, access, privilege, opportunity. At the highest echelon of empire, Egyptian empire, had everything at his disposal. Now he goes into Midian. Now, why did he choose Midian? Because Midian was just outside the jurisdiction. Because when you're a fugitive, the goal is to get outside of the jurisdiction of who you're running from. So Moses thought, I got to get as far away as possible where they actually don't have jurisdiction. And that ended up being Midian. So Moses spent the next 40 years in this place called the wilderness or Midian. Now, it's fascinating that Moses is running for his life because he's a man of justice, and we find out he loves to protect people. And he's sitting at a well, and there's two girls, a couple daughters are there, of a man named Jethro. And he's there, and people came to assault these two daughters. So Moses did what was deep inside of him, that was to protect, and that was to bring justice. Well, word got back to the dad named Jethro that this stranger came out of nowhere and saved us and protected us. This is what Moses does. It's so interesting. You can see the protector, the just person that needs justice in the early years of Moses. And that was the DNA that was necessary to be the Moses that we all adore. And so Jethro finds out and they accept Moses in. And over time, over the next 40 years, Moses gets married. He has a family. And guess what? He gets a job. What's interesting to me? So in the wilderness, he gains community. He gains family. He gains children. He gains a wife. And he gets a job. I think we need to reframe our perspective of wilderness. I think we need to take a whole look at wilderness from a broader perspective. I would venture to propose that a lot of us, when we hear wilderness, we think of dry, barren emptiness. And we're like, we got to get out of this. But I want to propose to you, Moses actually gained a family, had kids, fell in love, was embraced by a foreign family, and he got a job. And what was his job? He was a shepherd. He learned how to lead sheep. There are so many parallels in Scripture. When you can work and lead sheep, guess what? You can lead nations. Now, if you've ever been in the business of shepherding people, that's a serious situation. If you've not had that privilege yet, I encourage you to try it out sometime. Shepherding people is no small task. And the parallels are pretty amazing when you talk about shepherding sheep. And so Moses learned how to lead sheep. He learned how to direct them. But it would be so much easier if he was in the district of the Nile where there's lots of water and lots of food supply. But because he's in the desert, in the wilderness, he now had the task of finding out, how do I lead hungry, thirsty sheep to where there's water and to where there's food in a land that barely has any of that? That's how leaders are made. It's how to find oasis in the desert, how to find food where there's no food. And I want to tell you what, one of the greatest lessons you and I can learn in the hard seasons of life is to recognize there is water somewhere, I just have to find it. There is food somewhere, I'm just not looking in the right places. And the challenge is, we often use, well, I found food in the last season this way, I found water in the last season this way, and we try to find it in this season, and it's a completely different environment. I've said this before, but what nourished you in the last season will not nourish you in this season. You see, life in obscurity, life in a wilderness, teaches you to find a new cadence, a new rhythm, and a new pace. It teaches you to see everything differently. Now, I've noticed when I, in my own life, but I'm just, from my perspective, I've interacted with obviously lots of people, and I've noticed individuals that talk about what used to be is usually indicative they're still there. They might not physically be there, but they're still there emotionally, they're still there mentally, and they're still there spiritually. Until you're willing to let go of what was, you will never be able to move into what's becoming. It's one of the greatest, hardest, I wish it was easier, but how many know it's so complex? Some of us, our identity is so rooted in last season, we're afraid to let go of our identity. We're afraid to let go of who we know ourselves to be. But if you can embrace the fundamental truth that God is creating you to be someone that you didn't know existed, then you're ready to go for a journey. I got to keep moving here. And while Moses is in the second 40 years of his life, what's happening parallel is a nation in Egypt is groaning, is crying out. And God hears the cries of a nation, and he sees this man, Moses, who is learning what used to be liabilities is now becoming a place of strength, a person of resource. He's learning how to lead when nobody's watching. He's learning how to create a family. He's learning how to find food and water in places that no one knew it existed. And God said, it's time. So at the end of his next 40 years, so now Moses is 80 years old. Moses is out. He's walking the desert doing what he does. He's got a beautiful family. He's got kids. He's got a job. leading a sheep, and all of a sudden they're the burning bush, the famous story where the bush that talks. Imagine talking to a bush. Some of you can, because you talk to a lot of things. But imagine talking to a bush, and not just talking to a bush, the bush is talking to you now. What's so interesting to me is that this is the first record of God talking to Moses. There is no record in Scripture for the first 80 years of Moses' life that God and Moses had a conversation. Think about that for a moment. This man that we adore, love, he never talked to God once. And God said, now's the time. So it just brings up some thoughts I have. One is Moses was in the wilderness with no God. We go into the wilderness with God. Which one would you choose? I would choose going into the wilderness with God. But Moses somehow was able to navigate the complexities of 80 years of existence without relationship with God. And what I love is God introduces himself 80 years in, which begins the final 40 years of his life. Moses lived to be about 120. Something about 40 that I think is beautiful. What I want you to understand is that God is active in the silence. God is working on your behalf. When you look at Moses' life, we get the luxury, the privilege to read his story and see how God is touching the very beginning when he protected him from the genocide of baby boys at birth. He protected him here. He had orchestrated this, but Moses had no idea. Moses is just living his life. What's my point? God is active in your silence. God is active when you think nothing is happening. We have no idea how involved God is in our life. I have a friend, Candace and I have a friend who lives in Dubai, and we've mentioned we love it. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. It's one of the largest, fastest, most technologically advanced cities in the world, and it's an experience. It's loud, it's full, lots of people, lots of stuff going on. And our friend that lived there, him and his wife at the time, flew out to meet us in California when we still lived in Redding. And at the time, Kenneth and I had bought 15 acres just outside of Redding, and we had a house, and it was just beautiful, our little oasis. We didn't need to go on vacation, because going home every day felt like a vacation. That's how much we loved this property. And my friend flew in, he rented a car, and they drove into our driveway, and they get out of the driveway, and we hadn't seen them for a while, and they get out, and he starts doing this to his ears. He starts, like, trying to unclog his ears. He's kind of, you know, blowing his ears, and, man, my ears are clogged. And then he made this comment. He said, the silence is deafening. That's the title of today's talk. The silence is deafening. He had no framework of what it was like to hear nothing, because he lived in a world with so much noise. You see, sometimes God needs to remove you from the noise of Egypt so you can learn to hear what his voice sounds like. Come on now. Moses learned firsthand God provides even though there is abundance in the previous life. The wilderness has, give me a couple minutes and I'm going to land this thing. The wilderness has this amazing ability to reveal who you really are. The wilderness had this amazing ability to introduce to yourself a part of you that you didn't know existed. You see, Moses needed to learn to live and lead from God's presence and not from the amenities of the empire, and not access to abundance and privilege and opportunity. And this is what we see in the second 40 years, which by the time you get to the last 40 years, and I'm going to share one thing about the last 40 years. Moses' first wilderness was the same geographical location as the wilderness for Israel. I find that incredibly fascinating. Why do you think Moses could lead them into the wilderness? Because he had already been there. He had already scoped out the land, unknowingly scoped out the land. He knew where the watering holes were. He knew where the food was. He knew where to hide. He knew what journey to take, what trails to follow. He knew what to do. Why? Because he had already been there. I believe the kingdom needs people that are pioneers of wilderness seasons so you can lead people through those seasons. The reason why I can stand up here and share with you my most vulnerable story, because I've been living in that wilderness for 49 years. Guess what? Now I can, hey, I'll show you where the watering holes are. Just follow me. I'll show you where I quenched my thirst. I was starving for years. Guess what? I went over here. This is where I found my food. I found it over here. No one knew it behind this rock, but there's a lot of food sitting right here. You see, when you go into the wilderness and you learn to thrive in the wilderness, guess what? You then become a messenger, a leader, a human that can take other humans through the same season, because some people need you in their life to help them in a wilderness you're already familiar with. If you take a step back and look at what God's doing on the earth, and you have any ounce of desire to participate in seeing people come to God and experience who he is, we need Moses that have already been there to lead people through the wilderness, out of Egypt, through the wilderness, into all the promises God has for them. We've got to stop making this only about our promised land and realize this is for every human being on earth. So if you want to participate when God is doing, guess what? You get to play a role in leading people through and all the way to their promises. So Moses had already been there. I have this suspicion that as Pharaoh let the nation of Israel go, Moses is walking out of Egypt with no anxiety about where they were going. Why? He'd already been there. Maybe anxiety about all the people, but I don't think he was nervous about where they were going. Why? Because he had already been there. So the question I have for you, where have you been? Where have you been that others are looking for water and food? So that's my challenge for you today. And the continuation of the paradox of waiting and suffering, that space in between, guess what? God is taking all your liabilities and making them strengths. God is taking all the spots that you need to grow in so you can lead nations and lead people to freedom. Why don't you stand?
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com, and you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.